Blog Talk Radio.
Now, PW Torch brings you the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show. It's time to talk this week's WWE Monday Night Raw.
Danny, there were a number of developments on the show worth talking about, War Games, Survivor Series. I think one of the more intriguing developments is what they did with Austin Theory tonight. I was tipped off a little bit by somebody in WWE last week saying, you know, what they did with Theory was going to give him a new purpose that he hadn't had in recent weeks, even with the briefcase. But I wasn't tipped off that they were going to, you know, give him almost, I wouldn't call it a makeover, but certainly that was a more vicious, serious version of what we had seen with Theory before. And I wonder if this isn't actually an attempt to give him more of an edge and position him, kind of hit the reset button so fans look at him in a more credible way, that he's now got sort of this vicious chip on his shoulder. What did you think of what you saw from Theory tonight?
I did catch that, and I saw that, and I was like, okay, well, I like what I see. It's still going to take me a little bit of time to get over that kind of cocky, pretty boy image he has always had ever since he debuted. But I kind of like where they went. It's a start. It's not perfect, but I like that they're giving him more intensity, more focus. I kind of think he just still needs to maybe change the music up, maybe you know, I don't know. He still has some pretty boyish aspects about him that still kind of don't scream tough guy to me. But, I mean, I guess some of those things he can't really change. I guess he just kind of looks that way. But, I like what they did tonight, especially with the attack on Seth Rollins. And I wish he could have put Dolph Ziggler away a little bit faster. That doesn't scream, oh, he's a tough guy with a new edge. And he went 50-50 with Dolph Ziggler for like 15 minutes. He did that 3-4 months ago too. So that's not really screaming new improved Austin Theory to me, but I see what they're doing, and I like the direction they're going with him to start at least.
I would say on a show where Akira Tozawa lasted a few minutes with with Baron Corbin, I won't say anything about Dominic and Shelton because that feels sort of more even. You know, Shelton always loses, but Dominic is not, you know, Mr. Dominance.
True.
But yeah, I mean, and for that matter, you know, Gable lasted 10 minutes with Riddle. And Gable beat him. So, I mean, this is kind of part of when you have a 3-hour show and it's one of only it's one of three primetime shows you're putting together each week, you know, part of the booking approach that we need a few minutes here and there out of matches we might otherwise in a 2-hour format end more quickly. That might be what's at play here. But also, I mean, if they want to do more with this, I mean, Theory, you know, was really going after Ziggler brutally and viciously and aggressively. I think Ziggler's and they didn't do, you know, a clean finish. So my hunch is we'll see more from those two. I don't think it's just all about Seth and Theory, although certainly that is where they're heading. But I assume Ziggler's going to want some, you know, at least a chance at revenge, you know, as sort of a gatekeeper. He got a little credibility by lasting as long as he did.
Just retire, Ziggler. It's over. Please. Just stop. No. He's done.
He is good. You know, he's a good overall wrestler. And you know, Theory had a really nice 14-minute match with him. So there's value in that. But I know where you're coming from because it's like, you know, we're just not. There's not a lot. It's sort of like with Shelton. Like, there's just been, although with Ziggler, I guess it's a little different with Ziggler, because Ziggler's just been around so long, oh, consistently.
He's done to death. They've done him to death. Please.
Yes.
Change his gimmick. I even wrote that in my report. I'm not so down on him. I know there's value in him, but I wrote that in my report. They just need to change his presentation. Change his gimmick. He still has something left to give. Just change his presentation, please. He's been the same guy since 2012. Come on, man. Like, something new. Anything.
Yes. Oh, I agree. And Ziggler's promo beforehand, I don't know. I didn't even detail it in my report. I didn't type it out. But it was just one of those lame things where Ziggler says something. And, you know, he thinks he's being clever, or the writer thought he's being clever. And it's just like, that wasn't clever. And there's a little too much of that with Ziggler's character too, even when he's being, I guess, a babyface here. So the other, wrapping up the theory thing, I get what they're doing with him. He's, you know, we talked for years back when Kurt Angle was first getting pushed. And yes, I'm comparing Theory to Angle for the sake of this.
I want to see where this is going.
Theory was really good at, comedy. Angle had a good comedic touch and they leaned on that hard. But in real time back then, when Angle was first rising and getting main event push, I was among the voices saying, you know, Angle's going to make more money if they put the comedic side to the side and emphasize what a good wrestler, what a badass he is, and use his, you know, kind of surprise, it surprised everybody how good of a, how quickly he took to pro wrestling promos. And so utilize that, but in a way where he's more serious. And they didn't do it most of the time. I mean, the vast majority of the time, Angle was kind of a goof and he was doing comedy. And when he got serious, it was hard to take him seriously. So my hunch is with Theory, they're like, yeah, you showed in NXT, you were really good at comedy and you play, you know, he plays a dopey guy believably and effectively. I do think they were trying to shed that from him as part of a plan, not immediate, but a plan for him to be a top, top guy someday. And I think they want to reframe him as not a guy, you know, who's just a goof, who's not a serious person. He cashed in and he failed on his cash in of the Money in the Bank. But I mean, it was hardly fair. I mean, that wasn't like, you know, he just, you know, got squashed. I mean, he had a lot working against him and he would have had a win if not for Lashley. So, you know, I mean, I don't think last week was a burial. I think it was a way to get the briefcase away from him because it was sort of the only thing about him that you could think about or talk about is, when's he going to cash in on Roman? Is he going to cash in on Roman? Is he going to wait for Roman to lose or cash in on someone else? Now it can just be, that ticked him off, that set him off, and this is a new, more vicious version of him. The risk you have, and this is the issue with Angle, is when you're entertaining and you've got 2-3 hours on a show to fill, if you're Paul Levesque, you're thinking, I kind of need my people who are, quote, entertaining to entertain. But Chad Gable can play the part that Theory was playing. You know, it was kind of the dopey guy, good for a laugh.
Absolutely.
So, and Gable's not going to be a top guy. I love Gable's matches. I love Gable's promo.
Which I'm sad about. He's so good. He's so good. He's so good.
Yes. But all in all, I mean, I'm not sure I would sit there in a pitch meeting, so to speak, planning out the roster and go, yeah, let's push Gable as a serious main eventer.
Right.
He doesn't jump out that he's that they're underutilizing him in that way. I think he's fine the way he is. He gives you good matches and he's believable and competitive and credible, but he's not a top singles guy. But he and Otis can have really good tag matches in the meantime. But Theory does have that. You know, I mean, he's got more of a pretty boy, although tonight I thought he did look like he had more of an edge. I thought there was an intensity, a sinewiness, like a tightly wound, that I hadn't seen before. And I think that is actually a key to getting him to move up a tier in terms of how people perceive him.
Yeah, absolutely. I definitely see where you're coming from on that one. And that's funny that you brought up Kurt Angle and that serious side, because I remember
mocking me for it.
Well, when you flesh it out, okay, I got it.
Thank you for your patience.
Because I remember the specific match when I began to take him seriously, when it was No Way Out 2001 was the match against The Rock, when I saw that, oh, man, Angle's legit. Because, I mean, I'm, you know, I was like 12, but I was pretty engulfed in, you know, I guess I was a smart fan, quote unquote. But that was when I saw, okay, well, he's not just a fluke champion like I thought he was. He has a vicious side. And that's when I began to take him seriously in combination with that match against Shane McMahon at King of the Ring 2001 as well after that. And that's when I began to think, oh, he can do both things. Okay, you know, this guy's legit. So I see where you're coming from with that. I mean, it is a fine line to walk in being a comedy guy, and, you know, but it can be done. I'm willing to give him a shot and everything. And he did explain his decision to cash in on Seth very well, because I was very down on it when it happened. I was like, that's stupid. Why would you do that? I still think it's a little stupid, but at least he explained it. Somebody on one of the podcasts last week pointed out that exact theory about Roman not being vulnerable with the bloodline around him, and that's why he cashed in on Rollins.
So I wish I could remember who brought that up, but that was smart. So they did use that. So I'll give them credit on that one too as well.
I wish I could remember where I heard it, and it could have been something that was – I'm talking about something else, but I wish somebody brought it up on a podcast, and it might have actually been – an archive that we put up talking to some ex-creative team members. But I remember somebody bringing up the story. You have to be very careful not to show Vince McMahon and the writers that you can be funny. Because if Vince McMahon thinks you can be funny, if you're funny, he will book you as a funny guy and not a serious guy on TV. And, you know, Theory and Gargano and the way Theory showed really, I thought, really good acting range. He was believable as kind of that dopey, lackey guy. But I do think, and I think tonight's performance against Ziggler and others show, he has, I would posit, and I think credibly, main event in-ring ability. I don't think he's going to be the defining great worker of his generation, but I think he's absolutely past the bar as somebody who can have main event, credible main event style matches that get this is awesome chance and that kind of thing. And to give obvious exceptions, like Madcap Moss hasn't shown that to me yet. Wardlow hasn't shown that to me yet.
Tylan Dillinger, Sean Spears.
Ty Dillinger, Sean Spears. I had Tyson something in my head. I'm like, that's not it. He didn't have main event matches. You know, he had like, you know, he's had long matches in AEW, but they were just like, there's no edge. Go back to being a goof. Theory could have, you know, really, Theory could have ended up being Ty Dillinger. He could have been the guy who, you know, he's kind of got a look and, you know, just kind of a good body, good face. And he's, you know, like you can see him in a certain slot and maybe he can be a main event guy. But he just can't get that expression off his face that like he's giggling about somebody farting, and that's how he always looks. And Austin Theory tonight showed he's got a badass, like, you know, MMA guy ready for a title fight demeanor to him, and he had that tonight. He was upset, and I bought into it, and I saw a different side of him. So he showed the comedy. He paid the price, but it also is what got him attention and maybe got him moved up to the main roster. Among other things that Vince saw in him, like that John Cena-esque physique. I think he showed a different side to himself. Sometimes people can try to be serious, and you're like, yeah, right. I'm not buying it. He has a more serious side. So anyway, I thought this was a significant night in Austin Theory's career. I think it was meant to be, and I think with everything else going on the show, that's one of the things they wanted us to have as a takeaway. The other side of this, the other aspect of this, is Seth Rollins just a full-fledged babyface now? Are we officially in that zone? Not, well, you're sort of meant to decide because there's multiple people coming after him and some are heel, some are faces, but he'll end up coming out of this on the other side of heel. It seems like taking this kind of a beating from Theory, and I think Austin Theory is supposed to be a heel, means Seth even more so is coming across as a face. How do you have him categorized?
He's a face, 100%. I pinpointed as last week was when the official turn happened. And what I liked about him so far is they haven't changed his character. They haven't started having him pander to the fans. They haven't started to have him do all these, you know, stock babyface things. Now he's just pretty much the same character, just not insulting the fans, just kind of going after heels now. So yes, he is a full-fledged babyface. It was solidified last week.
Do you like that? What are the pros and cons?
Yeah, I like it. I'm a little nervous, though, but I like that they just have, like I said, they've kept his character the same thing. They just kind of had a little, like, very, very subtle tweaks that he's kind of acknowledging the fans now and thanking the fans and stuff like that, but not going sugary sweet on them. But the only thing I'm they were a little tepid for him tonight. I don't know if it was just the crowd was a little weak, but they just weren't. They're just not rallying behind him until the very end of his matches. I feel like they're getting behind him, but during his promos still have a lot to be desired as far as being a babyface, because his promos are such a heel style though. But that's kind of, and it seems like people just like the music. They like the that kind of stuff. But when he does his promos, it's still not. It's not babyface. It's still just very heelish. It's kind of grating, annoying. And I think after a while that may start to turn people off. So, I mean, I get they don't want to change too much about him, but that's the only downside about that. So I'd say that's probably the biggest con on that side.
It seemed to me, and it's a small sample and I could be overreading it, but it seemed like Seth is trying to turn down a little bit of that obnoxiousness.
Yeah.
And had a little bit more of a normal voice. And that may or may not be something that is going to continue. It could just be me. It could have been unintentional on his part or me misinterpreting or over reading too much into the tone. I'm not sure if that works for him. Like, I think part of what people want about him are the loud suits and the brashness and just being over the top. And, you know, I mean, there's times when you want him to be more serious, but I don't think that tonight was the occasion for that. So I am curious if he adjusts his demeanor as he, you know, is positioned now as a top babyface. I don't know at what point he crosses paths with Roman Reigns, but they've certainly been, you know, dropping little hints of that breadcrumbs, but that's coming up at some point. So, you know, I am curious because you're right. Singing, having a song that fans like to sing should not determine the course of your career as a character.
Didn't work for Fandango. Didn't work for him for very long.
That's right, yes. And, hey, I mean, even Jericho, you know, they've had a tough time fighting, deciding what to do with Chris Jericho and fans singing Judas. And should we, you know, cut it off in the middle when the fans boo or let him sing a little? Or should we, you know, have, you know, allow the fans to, you know, they paid their money, they want to be part of that and just sort of say, hey, that's a slice of Jericho's character. But, you know, when the music stops, he's a heel. You know, that can get in the way of what you're trying to do. If that's a babyface, fans are going to definitely like singing a song. But the other aspects of his personality have always been an issue with him being a face because he's annoying. You know, he's got an annoying voice and he's, you know, but I guess leaning into it and, you know, hanging a lantern on it instead of trying to hide it is sort of maybe what people are enjoying about him right now.
Yeah, because that's the one more thing, that the thing you brought up before is it was Stone Cold Steve Austin that said about it, like, who is Seth Rollins when he was a babyface before? And
what is a Seth freaking Rollins?
And he finally found it. It's this obnoxious, loud guy. But if he's a babyface, how can he still tap into that without becoming annoying and turning people off? So that's the conundrum, I guess.
Yeah. Yep. All right. Well, let's pause and introduce the show and give out the phone number and get on with other topics. This is the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show for Monday, November 14th, 2022. And I'm Wade Keller, the host of the program. I founded the Pro Wrestling Torch newsletter 3.5 decades ago as a teenager, and I've been covering pro wrestling ever since in various formats, including the paper copy newsletter, a website, apps, a sports talk radio show on the 50,000-watt KFAN back in the day. And now do a lot of podcasting throughout the week because there's so much to cover in pro wrestling. Yesterday, Rich Fan, Pro Wrestling Torch columnist Rich Fan, and I recorded the VIP exclusive Everything with Rich and Wade for over 2 hours. We talked some Viking football at the beginning. Spoiler alert for anyone who DVR'd the Monday Night Football game tonight. Fast forward a minute because I'm about to talk about that. All right, you've been warned. Pull those earbuds out. I'm excited to see there is no longer an undefeated team in the NFC.
Yeah.
They still have a tiebreaker on the Vikings because they crushed us in week two. We have gotten only better since then. A big trade, undefeated. One of the most amazing regular season games you'll ever see yesterday with the Vikings going into Buffalo and upsetting the Bills. Did you watch that live or just see highlights?
I was watching it live, and then we came back home. We had a 3-hour drive back home, so I caught the highlights. But I was wowed by the highlights. So I can only imagine how crazy of a game it was watching live.
A neighbor of mine took his dog out for a walk with like 2 minutes left in the game. And I went out. I was like, you're a Viking fan, right? He's like, yeah. And I'm like, are you watching the game? And I'm like, and he's like, oh, I taped it. I get too nervous watching it in real time. I'm like, oh, okay. He goes, why? Is it good news? I'm like, well, I'm not telling you. I just, it's near the end of the game. I said, I'm behind on the DVR. I don't even know what the outcome is. I had to embellish a little to protect him. And I was like, oh, I'm way behind in the game too. I'm just watching it now. But I just thought, you know, so. But basically, I needed to get out and talk to my neighbors about it. It was so stressful. And then my phone's ringing, and I'm texting family members. My mom called right as the ball was fumbled in the end zone by the Bills. And I'm like, wait, what's going on? Because she was like a minute ahead of me with her system versus mine, and I didn't even know what happened yet. Oh, my God. It was like, I'm still like, Someone posted an EKG chart from their iPhone or their Apple Watch, and like I'm finally come out of the range where where I'm being told to go see a doctor.
Yeah.
And I was in that zone too for a while. That was fun. And then the bonuses, the Eagles lost, so home
yes.
up high is in reach. This is fun. Although I'm not ruling out we're 8-8 or
well,
8-7 weeks.
Your Vikings meet my Cowboys next week. So,
I know. Yes.
Yeah.
That's why I'm happy about Philly in that game. What's the
yes.
Cowboys record?
We're 6-3 right now.
Yep.
6-3.
So I mean, if you win, I mean, it's like season's half over. You got plenty of time to win that division.
I know. Oh, man. I'm getting nervous now. I don't have my Apple Watch
game.
On, though. But
yes. Was it did the Cowboys lost to the Packers, didn't they?
Yes, in overtime.
Yeah, I did watch that.
That was a heartbreak.
I had mixed feelings. Yeah.
You got to side with us. You hate the Packers way more. You got to hate the Packers way more.
Yes, there's always the fear the Vikings will like have an injury and the Packers will get on a hot streak and then they'll just be laughing at us in 2 months. So, you know, there's always, I just want, you know, it's like with Seth Rollins, you don't give one stomp, you give three stomps.
You get three.
You know, because they'll get back up again.
You got to put them
the
down. Put them down.
Put them down. But at the same time, I'm like, well, if the Cowboys win, then that puts, there's less, it's just any NFC team that can knock us out of a better seating, you know, is a problem. So,
okay, that's,
so there's
that's fair. That's fair. That's fair. Okay, I got it. That's fair.
So, anyway, VIP members, check that out. You can hear Rich and I talk about that. It was shortly after the game ended, so we were really into that.
Wait, you need to just start I don't know. You probably don't have the time, but you need to tack on a football podcast, too, because sometimes I want to hear what you had to say about sports, NFL, NBA season. You know, I don't know if you can throw that in there somewhere, but
well, first of all, Jason Paul would school me on the NFL because as big of a fan as I am, it's very casual, and I could probably only name like six players on the Vikings if you quiz me right now. I'd recognize the whole team, but like in terms of just rattling off things, I don't have the depth of knowledge that I would need to really do a podcast on that. Plus, I like watch my sports on 3-day delay because all the sports are on when I'm covering wrestling, so I end up watching them a day or two later when I'm working out or just relaxing, and so my podcast would be very dated, too. That said, you know, Jason and I do talk some Vikings, but it's mostly me asking Jason questions when he's on the flagship every 3 weeks. Anyway, the other voice you hear, Danny Doucette, he is a PWTorch.com contributor. He covers Raw Monday nights at PWTorch.com alongside my reports, giving his details and his perspective on the show. So you can click back and forth with two tabs, hit refresh, and see what each of us are saying as the show progresses every Monday night, or just catch up afterwards. Danny, great to have you back in the co-host chair.
Thank you for having me, Wade. It is always a pleasure.
Yes, it's been a fun weekend and a fun Monday night. What do you think of her overall? Just a typical middle-of-the-road episode for them lately, or did you think it was better or worse?
Yeah, I thought it was pretty it's pretty middle of the road, but I like the ending. I like the main event. I like the theory attack at the end. But I know you guys were talking about the crowd last week. I've heard the crowd this week was also bad. Like it just kind of really just took the life out of the show. So I don't know what's going on with that. So it kind of made it a little bit more flat for me. But I thought the action overall was pretty good. But the crowd just killed it for me a little bit.
Yeah. So, we want to hear from you, our listeners. Also, if you are live streaming the show, we don't have any people on hold, so you can jump right in and be near the front of the line. The number is 347-215-8558. That's 347-215-8558. When you call, push 1 on your keypad. That'll play you on our switchboard and let us know that you want to be on the show. And you can email us too, WadeKellerPodcast@pwtorch.com. WadeKellerPodcast@pwtorch.com. Okay, I think that covers everything I need to say. So let's get on with other topics on the show. And actually, Dan, you had mentioned a minute ago the crowds the last 2 weeks being kind of not kind of, just not super enthusiastic. I mean, there are a couple chants. I'm always suspicious they're piping chants in when there's a dead crowd to get the crowd to just, you know, join in on the chants, but they're not organic, although they came at somewhat organic times during typical, you know, three-fourths of the way through a match that's hitting a crescendo, and you know, there seems to be at the 10-minute mark of any match, if there's any action fans will chant, this is awesome, for better or for worse. But we got a couple of those tonight. But other than that, yeah, and I'm wondering, and it's not the case throughout the entire show, but there's a little bit of ambiguity in terms of how we're supposed to feel about some of the wrestlers. It seems there's a lot of wrestlers who are sort of in transition or being portrayed in a way where you're like, yeah, I don't know. Like, Lashley has been a badass. He's been a babyface in recent times. He's been, you know, mean to Mustafa Ali, but Mustafa Ali has just been battered down and swatted aside and not really portrayed as credible. You had Riddle and Chad Gable. You know, Riddle's been sort of defined down and kind of dopey since Orton left. I would argue he's a less serious person. It was a good match, but I don't think that people are just like, yeah, beat Chad Gable, super intense. Same with Shelton. You know, he's not a super over babyface right now. He's just a, you know, a veteran name that people who've been watching a while recognize as being good, but I don't think people feel passionately about him. And then, you know, Austin Theory and Dolph Ziggler was just like a good match, but people aren't super excited about Dolph Ziggler. Oh yeah, we need Dolph to win. And then Akira Tozawa has been a 24/7 joke. And then with Seth Rollins and Finn Balor, it's like, yeah, Finn's a heel. Seth was a heel. They like singing Seth's name, but it doesn't, like, when I run through this show, there's not just this clearly defined babyface who's in jeopardy against a credible heel who fans can rally around, either in the ring or even to the degree that I think is effective, is having the babyface feel that they're in jeopardy against a credible heel. And there's just not a lot of that going on. So I think some of the crowd is with the lay of the land of Raw right now is we're just here to present stars to you and entertain you, but it doesn't feel like there's a clear-cut baby faces against credible heels with the stakes being high, and there's too many people kind of shuffling around in different roles right now. Does that premise work for you? Do you think I'm overstating that as a reason that maybe the crowds aren't super enthusiastic because WWE's in more of a transition period, elevating Theory, shifting Seth to a baby face? Gargano's not exactly, you know, cheer-worthy at this point. So, yeah, your thoughts on that.
I think that's a fair way to frame it. I couldn't really put my finger on what was going on, but that does make sense as a reason. Kevin Owens was one of the most garnering the best reactions. He's gone. He's hurt now. Ray was always getting pretty good reactions as well. He's gone. He's injured. He went to SmackDown. Now he's injured. The Bloodline is the hottest thing. They're on SmackDown. Sometimes on Raw, Drew McIntyre, who was SmackDown, Sheamus getting some SmackDown. It seems like all the hotter stars are on SmackDown right now, or either injured or what have you. Edge is gone. You know, who knows we're going to get The Rock. John Cena, he's up in limbo. He could garner some cheers. You know, it's just everybody who evokes a reaction from the crowd is just not around, and everybody else just kind of seems like they're coming out and just, yeah, you know, we're here, we're doing our thing, but, you know, we're not really that into it. But I don't know. I mean, I wish I could have a better handle on what's going on, but Raw's a little cold at the moment. It started off so hot at the around SummerSlam, and now everything just feels kind of tepid right now. It's just I don't know what it is.
Are you buying Seth as his attempt to elevate the U.S. title? Like, he's not saying it's the most important title in wrestling, because I think he's destined to want to go after the most important titles in wrestling that Reigns holds. But he said, you know, I've elevated the U.S. title to be the most important title on Monday nights. And I'm like, well, what was the most important title on Monday nights since Roman took the Raw-based world title? What title did the U.S. title leap over? Was it 24/7 title? Like, I mean, what? I mean, it's not much of a claim. That said, they have tried to elevate the U.S. title, including by having, and I think it's one of the underrated aspects or overlooked aspects of why they had Theory cash in Money in the Bank last night. It wasn't just to get the briefcase off of him. I think it was to try to create the perception that the U.S. title is important enough for a Money in the Bank cash in, or it may have that effect. But it's still the U.S. title. It's still not the world title. And so as much as they're trying to elevate it, and I applaud them for doing it, and I think they're doing a decent job of it, it does define Raw as a B show when you don't even have the world champion showing up, or when he does, it's like a big special rare appearance. Your thoughts on that aspect of Raw?
Yeah, I can't disagree there. I mean, I wouldn't have much of a have much of an argument because the 24/7 title, that's in the trash or near the trash next to it, wherever she threw it. And the tag team titles, they're mostly on SmackDown as well with the Usos. They don't even have a TV title, a hardcore title, nothing to even, you know, stake a claim as far as being a number two title. So, and another reason I thought it was dumb that Austin Theory cashed in the money in the bank on it was because, dude, he's giving out open challenges every week. Why would you waste your briefcase on it? Just show up for the open challenge. Ding.
Well, I will counter that. And this is why, and I think it's an important differentiation, is the Money in the Bank allows you to cash it in when the opponent is beaten and battered and vulnerable. And an open challenge is facing a guy when he's fresh, standing in the ring knowing you're coming. The Money in the Bank was Theory's chance as a heel to kind of be, not sneaky, but like have a big advantage cashing in after Seth was beat down.
That's fair. But I still think he's an idiot, but that's just – I guess I just want to call him an idiot.
Yeah, fair enough.
But, yeah, I mean, I'm glad they don't have more titles. I'm glad this is not AEW where you get a championship, you get a championship, everybody gets a championship. Yeah, I'm glad it's not that, but, yeah. I think Rollins is more trying to claim that, you know – he defends it more, I guess, is the prestige he's trying to bring to it as far as the whole John Cena, I'm going to defend this thing every week type of thing. And more defense, I guess they don't want to maybe frame it as such, but more defenses make it more prestigious, I guess, is what they're trying to angle at, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah. I think so too. All right. Well, let's go to our first call. We got area code 412 up first. Go ahead. State your name and where you're calling from.
Hey, Wade. It's your buddy JD in Pittsburgh. How you doing?
Doing good, JD. Thanks for calling. What's on your mind about Raw tonight?
I'll tell you what, though. I mean, I enjoy your stuff. I always read your stuff every day, and I keep informative with all the post shows you guys do, like this one, and keep up the good work on that. I got to say, they didn't sell me on Survivor Series tonight. This was a pile of crap tonight. And like you said, the attendance was bad and has been bad the last few weeks. However, I mean, last week they had under 6,000 in Wilkes-Barre, which is over about 4 hours away from Pittsburgh, of course. I think they did okay with the crowd tonight, but it just seemed like they piped in the crowd way too much tonight. The main event was good, however, and yes, Austin Theory got back some momentum tonight, and they need to build that upon that because they're talking about Theory and John Cena possibly at WrestleMania. I don't know if you've heard that, but I'll tell you what, they have got to sell me next week in Albany, however, in Survivor Series, because right now, I mean, ever since Hunter took over the booking, however, it just seems like, I mean, every week or every other week, he's doing the same old bullshit, however, with the same old crap. I mean, I understand Owens is out with injury. The Street Profits haven't been seen in weeks. We understand how I don't know who's writing these TV shows right now, but right now the TV writing is just becoming very, very lackluster, to say the least.
Danny, what do you think?
I can't argue with that passion. I'm glad to hear. I'm glad to hear you fired up about it. I can't say I feel as strongly, but I appreciate your passion. You're entitled to your opinion. I feel that. I mean, it's. I could definitely see how somebody would be, how fans could be just kind of not so receptive to what's going on right now. I think it's been better since Triple H took over overall, but yeah, this hasn't been really that impressive. I mean, if once you get past the, as we like to say, sugar rush of just the new regime and everything like that, it kind of just goes right back to the same old thing. If I wasn't before I used to cover for the Torch, around this time of year, I would be tuning out. After SummerSlam, I was tuned out. They'd have to grab me with something really strong in order to keep me around past up until the Royal Rumble is when I would usually tune back in. So I honestly think if I was not covering, I probably wouldn't be watching right now, to be honest, because I probably would have been like, okay, well, it's kind of the same old thing. So I can't argue with JD. I mean, I mean, I respect your opinion. I can see how that, how you could formulate that.
JD, is there something that they could tangibly be doing differently? If somebody in WWE is listening right now and they're like, hey, if you want to keep me or get me more enthusiastic, keep me watching, here's, you know, two, three things
that are doable.
What would those be?
There's a couple things, I think. First off, you got to cut back the time. I mean, I think you got to go back to 2 hours. I think 3 hours has been done way too much over the years. We've seen that. Two, definitely the announcing. I mean, Kevin Patrick has just been very, very lackluster in his announcing. And Corey Graves, I understand he's the heel announcer or anything like that, but every week he's sucking enough ass and kissing enough ass with management, however, and has been doing it for years. But he is just so, so horrible. He's a poor man's Bobby the Brain Heenan, Jesse Ventura. He is not that great. I mean, I understand he's had some issues lately, however, with what's happened to him, and definitely prayers to him, and, of course, Mrs. Graves, of course, you know, Carmella, but that's beside the point. Every week it seems like, I mean, even before this all happened over the last few years, Graves continues to be, every week, a total sea-sucker when it comes to announcing. He is the biggest kiss ass in the company, and Triple H just loves to sing his praises. I'm sorry. Get better announcing and cut the show back to 2 hours. You have to do that, I think, going into the new year.
All right, very good. JD, appreciate your perspective. Danny, same question to you. What are a couple things that you would do that are doable? Like saying cut Raw from 3 to 2, not quite in the spirit of my question, in the sense that that's
man,
not
I
doing,
wish.
You know, yeah, you can't quite raise wave a magic wand and you know, USA Network's like, oh yeah, sure, you know, but you know that might happen. You know, I mean, I think it'd be hard to measure. It's Sting losing an hour of TV revenue, but I think they would gain other things that are less tangible or measurable. But it would lead, I think, to people being more enthusiastic about the product, and you'd have hotter crowds, and you would end up having the 2 hours that are taking place. Everything would be fresher. The crowd would be hotter. That lead to a sense of a hotter product. You wouldn't have to overexpose your talent. You wouldn't have to have matches that were longer than you wanted to book otherwise. And I think people are more likely to commit to 2 hours, whereas once it's three, people are like, ah, I'll just skip it. You know, you reach that point of no return. I mean, I like a really good NFL game, but if they somehow made it 7 hours, I wouldn't watch in real time. You know, and that's an exaggerated example, but there's, you know, at some point, there's a tipping point in terms of how much time you're willing to commit. So,
wait, you've seen WrestleMania. 7 hours.
Yes. Even once a year, WrestleMania, that's too much. Imagine that every week. Or, you know, 18 weeks here. So what are your top things that you would like to see switched?
I would like to see, as much flack as AEW gets for it, I would like to see way more cycling of different wrestlers. I don't care if it's jobbers. I don't care if it's low-card wrestlers. And I don't even care if it's the same people going over, like squash matches or what have you. Just cycle in some different jobbers. Cycle in different talent. Have different people just show up and work different matches. Shorter, more matches, but shorter matches. Just throw some short matches with – just switch up the format, I guess, is more what – it feels like it's just such a fill-in-the-blank. They have a format sheet, and they have every segment listed, and it's just, all right, we're going to slot these people in, slot it in. It's just the same sanitized format every single week. It just feels like you just know what's coming. You know when a commercial break's coming. You know when somebody's going to do an interview, somebody's going to interrupt the interview. It just all feels so samey all the time. It's just like do things out of order. Put the main event at the beginning of the show. Put the main event in the middle of the show. I can't even, it's just like do different things. Just aim to do format things differently every week or every couple of weeks, something. It just feels like it's just been the same Raw over and over again. And it's felt a bit different since Triple H took over, but it feels like everyone has alluded to on the Torch podcast ever since. You don't want to change it too much, but I feel like it's kind of just going right back down that same path of just sameness that was before Triple H took over. So I just feel like they need to just shift up the formatting and just make a conscious effort to do that and just make things feel more unpredictable. Unpredictability, I guess, what I would say is just that
era.
Yeah,
I think that's totally fair. I think that the feeling is there's this form that they fill out every week, you know, and they drop things in, and then you hit return, and now you've got a show format. And yeah, the sense of more unpredictability would be good. I mean, it's I wouldn't say it's easier said than done because, I mean, there are some things that you can do to make things feel unpredictable. I will say I think Paul Levesque tried to do that by opening Raw with, like, a brawl going on. You know, like, it just, oh, things are already happening. Or Lashley taking the microphone before the show starts. And, like, there's been things he's done to, I think, kind of shake up the way that goes and the expected kind of flow of the show. So I actually think he's on the same page, but I think there is a certain grind to this job where, you know, you are just kind of trying not to make waves, fill out the form, drop your talent into spots and hope that you can maintain good enough ratings to get another big TV deal. Any big shakeup that doesn't result in an increase in viewership might be attributed to a change you made. And I think he's sort of in, you know, to extend the NFL analogy, he's in a prevent defense right now in terms of, I think, his booking approach. The last caller, JD, also brought up the hype for Survivor Series. What do you think of the developments tonight for Survivor Series War Games, in particular regarding War Games? Because we don't know a lot else, but they did fill that out, Mia Yim choosing after being offered a spot by Damage Control, choosing instead to be with Bel Air Bliss and Asuka, and then there'll be another partner yet to be named, and then Damage Control ended up with Rhea Ripley saying, well, if Mia Yim's on against you guys, I'm with you guys. So she's going to be with Bayley, Dakota Kai, and Io Sky. So we had that development. What do you think of that, and how do you grade the hype for Survivor Series a couple weeks out here?
Graded a solid D, because it just they named a couple of opponents or a couple of participants in the War Games match, but it was kind of like, really, Mia Yim? Like, I thought she was already in this feud with, you know, the OC against the Judgment Day. I thought they were going to have a match, you know, pitting their teams against each other in some form or fashion. But then you had Styles challenge Balor to a match. So, and I'm like, okay, well, that might be good, but, you know, I don't really care about seeing Styles and Balor in a match that kind of just doesn't have any stakes to it or anything. It's just kind of going to be a match, and sure, like, all right, that sounds fine, but I'm more intrigued in the women's War Games match, but I just didn't understand also Rhea Ripley. I understand the premise of, you know, Mia Yim's in the match, so I want to get in there too, but Rhea Ripley seems just too, like, you know, that doesn't seem like it would be her style. I'm like, I ain't about to join up with them. I don't care about that. Like, I'm doing my own thing, you know. It feels like she's above that. She's way bigger star than anybody in Damage Control. So she feels like she should be running the show. Not, oh, I'm just going to latch onto you guys' team because my rival is going to be in there. That doesn't make any – it didn't make any sense to me. I didn't really care for it. I think Ripley should go in there and just beat up everybody in a match and just be done with it. But that'd be a way better use of her in that match. But, yeah, I didn't really care for it too much. But I think the match will be good, so I guess I'll live with it. I can't wait to see who the surprises will be. I got a couple ideas in mind, but I want to see who the surprises will be.
Don't. What are your ideas?
Well, I mean, because they have one more spot for the – is it two more spots for the baby faces or one more spot for the baby? Because there's Mia Yim – Bianca, okay. Well, obviously, I think it's going to be Becky Lynch, but, I mean, yeah. Am I alone in that? I can see on the other side maybe being Charlotte Flair being with Damage Control, possibly.
Well, they've got that filled out, though, because you got Bayley, Dakota, Io, and Nikki and Ripley now.
Oh, that's right, that's right.
Yep.
That's right. You're right.
So,
yeah.
But it could be Charlotte on the other side. I mean, I don't know. You know, Charlotte's all over the place,
yeah,
with her
true.
Character.
But that would be so bad. Becky would make way more sense. They took her out. Damage Control took her out. That it would make way more sense for her to come over there and jump in the other side. It'd be perfect storyline wise, and that's just my opinion on that one. So
yeah.
I think that'll be a good fit.
Would you want them to announce Becky ahead of time to elevate interest in the show going in, or have Becky be a surprise mystery partner to create a huge buzz and kind of do what AEW does, which is, you know, there's always something big happening at our shows. You got to watch live. And you're going to regret it, 'cause you're going to see on social media, this big thing happened that you weren't there for.
I say just do a surprise. I'm a sucker for even though, you know, AEW's kind of done them to death, but I'm a sucker for those surprise. Even though, you know, the surprises, you know, are coming, you know, who it's going to be already, but you just want to see it anyway. I feel like that's something that would get me to tune in. It's like, oh, it's going to be probably be Becky Lynch, but you don't quite know, actually. So you got to tune in to make sure it's who you think it is. So I kind of like those. So I would prefer a surprise, but that's just me. I know that everybody's not a fan of that.
Yep. All right. Very good. I want to we'll get the call soon. You can still call us. It's a short line tonight, 347-215-8558. And push 1 on your keypad if you want to join the conversation. First, I want to get an email in Zach in Texas. So we've been talking about Austin Theory. Zach's take is as follows. Last week, Austin Theory failed in his Money in the Bank cash-in attempt and looked like a complete idiot in the process. I thought that was the end of his push at long last. But apparently, Hunter is still watching horror movies well after Halloween because he's cast Theory as a villain in a horror movie like Michael Myers. Just when you think he's dead, here he is again, the center of attention. Why? Why is Theory getting pushed ahead of someone like Mustafa Ali, an actually good human being with immense talent and charisma? So first of all, Austin Theory did not succeed. Don't know if it's a failure when it looked like he was going to have a win, if not for Lashley. This wasn't some inept cash-in and he just lost clean and he looks foolish in that way. So I think they booked it in a way to kind of temper the idea that he's seen as a failure. Second, I don't think he looked like a complete idiot. I think he looked like somebody who had something taken from him. Of course, it's heelish to try to cash in on someone who just got beat up. I'm not saying there's sympathy on him, but I think they had their eye on protecting him in losing. I didn't look at last week as a burial or a sign that they were moving him down the roster. They gave him something to vent about and a spark. So I just disagree with Zach's framing of it. Also, I have been an advocate for Mustafa Ali getting a push, but I will take Austin Theory 10 out of 10 times over Mustafa Ali right now, even if I only get to use him for 3 years. You know, if we subtract age from it, Mustafa Ali's been defined down, and he's not – I don't think his promos have been great. I'm a fan of Mustafa, but I don't think his mic work has been – I mean, it's been fine, like not bad, but I'm not watching him going, oh, man, this is – if Levesque gets behind this guy, he can move up the card. I think he's good for really good matches, but I mean, I've been pushing the idea that Theory can be a main event guy for a while. I'm not saying it's a guarantee, but I take him over Mustafa. I don't think Levesque is foolish for pushing Mustafa. And I think Zach's saying, you know, that he has immense talent and charisma. I mean, I think Theory has shown he has immense talent and charisma too. You know, so what's your take on Zach's take, Danny?
Well, I have to say, Zach, unfortunately, being a good person does not in the wrestling business does not necessitate a push because, yeah, we've seen plenty of scumbags get lots of pushes. Hulk Hogan, for example. But anyway,
and I don't know that Theory's a documented horrible person.
There's
some, you know, I mean, the things that I'm hearing about him behind the scenes, if you just judge how he is carrying himself now, is somebody who's shows up and is a sponge for knowledge and is wants to learn. He wants to know what he has to do to be a top guy. He's showing all those the attitude check boxes that you need, that if you want to be given a chance to be a top guy, you have to have other things going for you, of course. But if you don't want to deter a push, there's these, like, you know, checklist of things that you should do. He's doing all of them. He is really aware that there's a chance for him to be a star, and he really is trying. So, I mean, it's not a huge sample size, and if you pull the locker room, there might be differing opinions on him. But this isn't a guy who shows up and it's like, hey, hand me everything, and I know everything. This is somebody who you know, wants it and wants to know what he has to do to get it. So in that respect, I certainly hear others. I ask around and I hear things about attitude issues with wrestlers. I have not heard that he has one. Doesn't mean you won't have to cheer for him succeeding overall, but in terms of the approach he's bringing each week, it's not deterring people who are fans of his from rooting for him.
Yeah. I've been burned out by that one before. I mean, because I remember thinking, oh, Shawn Michaels in 1996, he was my guy, man. He seems like the nicest guy, and man, did I get burned on that one. Oh boy, I find it out later, he was the biggest jerk of all time. So, yeah, being a good guy doesn't necessarily get you a push. But anyways, as far as Mustafa Ali, yeah, he's annoying me more and more each week. I don't know what they done with him, but he's getting on my nerves. He's like a little fly that you just keep thinking you killed, and, you know, he just keeps coming back buzzing around your head. It's like, man, I'm kind of want to see him. I kind of enjoy seeing Lashley beat him up now. So it's like, are they going to have to turn this guy? I mean, they might as well make him the new X-Pac, just kind of a annoying little gnat of a man. He just won't go away. You know? Maybe that can be his new gimmick. I don't know. But
what would you have done differently with Mustafa? I mean, because he is talented. I thought he deserved more push.
Yeah,
he's so
good. Yeah, I don't know what – ever since that whole – you know, when he was supposed to get the Kofi push and he got hurt, and then it just seems like every time he gets a push, something happens. I don't even know. I guess they should have just – I don't even know what I would have done with him. I guess just keep him in that cruiserweight – well, I guess cruiserweight division is dead now, but just kind of keep him in that spunky guy that always gets beat. I guess that's his forever destined to be his role. I don't think he's going to break out of that anytime soon. I don't know what the deal is with him, but – do you have any theories?
No, I really don't. I mean, this should be working better than it is for me. And it's not like I'm like, oh, pull the plug. I just, he's talented. He's likable. He's charismatic. He's got a good look. I say just, you know, keep trying. But having him be a guy who gets beat up off camera and then springs back into action and gets tossed aside again, I mean, it isn't the type of he's putting up a spirited fight, but he keeps getting knocked down, and I don't know that that's going to help people get behind him. I mean, it's pretty clear the way Lashley's treated Ali that if fans get behind Ali, they're not going to end up seeing him, you know, succeed at a high level, you know, within the storyline, within the structure of the show, and that can, you know, kind of put a stop to some of his fan base getting too enthusiastic. But I don't really know, you know, what the answer is. I mean, he can go out there and have really good matches. I mean, maybe just – you know, if there is a roster shakeup, there's that. There's, you know, NXT. You know, he could go be a really good athlete working with some guys down there. You know, maybe being a heel in NXT would be better than being a face here. Although you don't want a guy who just gets swatted around like he has been. Go be a big deal in NXT. That was, you know, they tried that with Ziggler to a degree in NXT, and it defines down NXT a bit too. So I'm not sure.
One more. I say just. I mean, if they want him so bad to be – put him over Lashley. See what happens. go for it. I mean, they'll have a good match. We know that. Just put him over. See what happens. Maybe it'll stick. Who knows? But I got nothing beyond that.
Yes, yes. Okay. Johnny Gargano. What's gone wrong with him? Because we're talking about Ali. I want to talk about Gargano for a second. Are you enjoying him in this role or not? Start with that, and then we'll go from there.
I am not enjoying him in this role. He has little – it's weird with me. He has little lines that I kind of like – like I kind of chuckle at, and then he just keeps talking and talking and talking, and he just sounds so smug. Just you know, the guy that just like somebody told him he was funny, and then now he just keeps having to prove that he's funny, just always telling jokes. He's the Chandler Bing of WWE, except he's not funny, annoying. He's just so annoying. And he seems like a likable guy, but he seems like he's trying to be likable. He's like, I want everybody to like me, please. I'm going to tell jokes, and I'm going to be funny, and please like me. So, yeah, I haven't been enjoying him too much, and even I'm kind of starting to side with The Miz. It's like, why do you care so much? Like, just let it go already. Like, it's not – is he taking your money? What does it matter? Just get over it already. Who cares? If Dexter's dumb enough to not get paid, then that's his fault. But, yeah, pretty much how I feel about Gargano.
Yeah, yep. All right, well, let's jump over to Ryan in Cumberland, Maryland next. Ryan, thanks for calling. What have you got for us tonight?
I have a question on Matt Riddle. Is he in some sort of trouble – maybe is he doing too much recreational 420? I know you got the name wrong. I think of the woman announcer tonight. So that was a little strange, but is there any other reason why he may have been doing a lot of jobs lately? I think he jobbed last week, too.
Who'd you say? Who's the first part of your? You're talking about Riddle?
Yeah, I know he got the name of the lady announcer wrong, I believe, at least according to the internet. I don't know if that was true or not. I didn't catch that, but I know that was a topic tonight on Twitter. And just trying to figure out why he's been. It's pretty rare that someone loses twice, you know, in a row at his level, because he was being pushed near the top of the card.
Yeah, well, Riddle has not always made it easy for people in power to push him. He had a lot of momentum with Randy Orton. I agree that it has cooled off since then. I would say having Otis hold Gable's boots for extra leverage while you're getting pinned is not a burial, but if you're a top guy, you're not getting pinned by Gable no matter what. Like if they have plans for you to be in a main event, you're not even losing with interference to Gable. So this is dividing him down, but they've moved him. They've given him, you know, world title match, a high profile, you know, TV match. And he lost, you know, it's like they haven't ever, they've got up to the point where you think, maybe they're going to go all the way and push him as a top guy. And they don't. I don't think it has anything to do with marijuana. I mean, that's just legal and it shouldn't be a stigma. It just in and of itself. However, you know, if anybody shows up in any condition, that would reduce their ability to wrestle safely or remember their lines or be on time, regardless of what it is, including they're sober and they're just irresponsible or don't know how to set their phone alarm, that's going to work against you. I'm not saying that's happened with him, but I'm just saying, like, you know, with different things can cause that, and that could be a factor. But I do agree Riddle has lost steam. Him getting the name of an interviewer wrong, which I didn't catch, if that wasn't on purpose, because Jericho does that on purpose, other wrestlers do that as a bit on purpose, that can seem disrespectful. And, you know, some people might be upset. That's not going to stop them from making money with them if they think that they can. So I'm not sure what to think of where Riddle is right now, other than he's teaming with Elias and losing to Chad Gable. I mean, there's no way to spin that as he's in a better place now than he was 4 months ago, Danny.
Ryan, I have to agree with you. I thought the same thing. I was like, oh man, he lost to he lost last week, and then he lost this week too. I'm like, I know Wade. I know you say, you know, it's not really necessarily a burial, but I was kind of like, well, why is he doing so many jobs? He should be, like you said, he should be beating Chad Gable. Like, but I didn't hear him getting. I remember the segment with the interviewer. I thought he said Kathy, but. I didn't catch that either, but I'm not sure what's going on with Riddle. I don't know if it's one of those things where they think, oh, him being in a tag team with Elias, a comedy tag team, that's a great spot to be in. Anybody else would kill to be in that spot. So I think it's probably one of those deals where they think he's still in a good position. Oh, he's a made man. He gets pops. When Randy Orton comes back, he's going to be fine. I think they think they can kind of play loosey goosey with his wins and loss records, and they think he'll be fine as long as he can team with the guys and be funny, and you know he's set, so he won't really lose much by losing to Gable or anybody like that.
All right, very good. Ryan, what else?
Question on Beth Phoenix. I know they went back to that injury angle tonight. Does that make her a lock to be the surprise for the babyface team, or do you think there's somebody else that could come to mind?
Danny, you had ideas. What do you think?
I thought it was Becky Lynch, but now that you bring that up, I didn't even think about that. It didn't even cross my mind. You may be correct. They were really hammering that thing home, and they kept mentioning Edge, which they haven't mentioned him in a while. So you may just be right about that.
Yeah, they brought the replay back tonight, and there hasn't been a lot of talk about Edge lately. Very good, Ryan. What's third for us?
I caught Corey Graves in a little bit of a lie tonight, since I live fairly close where he grew up. He claimed he lives where Mr. Rogers is from, which is incorrect.
Yeah.
Because Corey Graves is not from Latrobe, Pennsylvania, where Mr. Rogers is from. And you can even look it up on the internet that the museum is in Latrobe. So what do you think would have happened if Kevin Patrick would have got a little bit smarter than Gaze? Now, wait a second. Mr. Rogers is from Latrobe, not from where you're at.
Well, fact check accepted. I didn't know.
Me either.
Yes. You know.
Ryan, is it true that Mr. Rogers was a Marine sniper?
I don't know that. I know there's a lot of books in my hometown about Mr. Rogers, since he lives so close to my hometown, that I haven't really read them carefully. Know that.
Yeah.
I think that was just some fake internet rumor, but I believed it for the longest time.
All right, very good. What else, Ryan?
Final question is on the main event tonight, that they said the U.S. title is the championship of Raw. How long do you think it will take them to bring back the Universal title shot to Monday Night Raw? Do you think it might take a couple of years, or do you think it's going to be within the next year that we see a Universal title match on Raw?
Boy, I mean, it depends on so many things. Roman Reigns doesn't wrestle very much, so if the titles are if he's holding both belts, and he might for quite a while, it might be quite a while before there's an actual defense on Raw. You know, Paul Levesque inherited this situation with the titles and, you know, worked hard early on to try to elevate the U.S. and IC titles with those video packages on their history. I think things since then have settled kind of back into a more typical Raw format without some of these just obvious things that Paul Levesque was doing that might not have been done if Vince weren't still in control. I don't think somebody watching tonight's episode would think, oh, this is definitely not Vince McMahon's show. And that goes to what we're saying earlier about adding some unpredictability to it. But since he inherited a lot of that stuff, you know, he doesn't want to interrupt that storyline. So I think he's still trying to make the best of the U.S. title as the primary belt on Raw. Danny, I don't think any of us are sitting around waiting for the Universal title to show up on Raw unless Roman loses one of the belts or both of the belts and they, you know, have separate belts on separate shows again. And if the Universal were linked up with Raw, I mean, with a brand split, anything can happen. What do you think?
Yeah, the only way I could see that happen is if Raw is in danger of getting canceled or, you know, something like that. They need a hotshot angle to really boost it home. Then they would probably defend the title, give a title match out then. But, yeah, Roman would have to lose the belts, and they'd have to split up the belts for me to see even think there will be another title match. So let's just say if Drew McIntyre wins it again, yeah, they'd do it then probably.
All right, anything else for us?
A little bit of a warning to Matt Riddle. If he comes to Maryland, marijuana will not become legal till next summer, I believe, and there's still a lot of rules you got to follow if you're going to light one of those up, I believe. So I want to make sure he doesn't get in trouble around here.
Warning heeded. warning heated. All right, thanks, Ryan. Appreciate the call.
Thanks, Ryan.
Thanks for taking it.
Yeah, you bet. Man, maybe someone should get to tell Riddle about that, as Ryan just said. I mean, we don't want him to get in trouble.
No, we don't want that. We don't want that.
yes. All right, another email, not injury.
There's
Although
been
injury,
too many already.
Yes, there's an injury in the opening line of the email, and somehow that I blurted that up. Spoiler alert, everybody. Hey, everybody, JB from Detroit. Do you guys think the rumored Kevin Owens MCL injury at a house show will have any effect on the build to Mania? I imagine he's supposed to be injected into the Bloodline storyline at some point, with him and Sammy teaming against the Usos, likely at Mania. Do you think the injury will affect anything that he has planned for Survivor Series or even the Rumble? The injury could take 6 weeks or more to heal, according to a quick Google search. WWE's not even talking about Kevin Owens these days. Even if KO was healthy, I think there are some indications they just kind of put that thing with him and Sammy aside, because the Sammy storyline of the Bloodline was lasting longer than originally intended, and we might have been further along in the Sammy KO dynamic in their history and maybe teaming together for a while. I don't know the status of KO when he's going to be able to come back. It seems like he'd be somebody who would make sense to be in the War Games match with, opposite of the Bloodline, but I don't know if that's even feasible at this point. So, but if he's healthy by WrestleMania, or they think he will be, but it is an injury that'll keep him out for a while, I think he'd be involved at WrestleMania. But man, that's a long ways away, and a lot is going to happen. I do not know the pace of Sammy and him breaking up with the Bloodline or teaming with KO against the wishes of the Usos or to go after the Usos. I mean, I think Sammy and KO against the Usos feels like a WrestleMania-worthy destination for the stories to take us. If that's what they want to do, I definitely hope both Sammy and KO are healthy for that. Danny, any thoughts on your side?
I know. Yeah, I was I was really set on the Sami and KO versus the Usos at WrestleMania, but now it feels like that might be too soon. It seems like they still can drag it out a little bit longer. I mean, that'd be a good time to do it, sure, but I feel like they still have a lot more story to be told. So I think they can stretch it out to not next year's WrestleMania or anything, 2024, but maybe SummerSlam. I'd stretch it out a little bit more to SummerSlam. So that's plenty of time for KO to get healthy, of course. But I think they need to ride this Sami thing until the wheels fall off. So I say we got to stretch it out a little past WrestleMania. So I think it'll be all right.
All right, very good. He also says, I know it's been mentioned in various forms on your shows the last few weeks, but yet again, very little was done to give Mia Yim any background, personality, or character in her pre-match segment with the OC. This continues to be a failure of Triple H's booking, in my opinion. Should we know more about Mia Yim? I mean, what's been established on Raw about her? It's Mia Yim. That's it.
They said nothing at all. And it's just like she just dropped in with the OC, and it's kind of like, okay, they seem like friends and everything, I guess. But, yeah, it's just kind of like, who is she? What are we supposed to... She's got blue hair. She seems like she's cool, but yeah, we don't really know anything about her. It's just kind of like it is a step up from Retribution, I will say, but that's not a hard bar to clear. But yeah, she just kind of seems generic. They need to do something about that. I wrote that in my report as well. Yeah. I'm not too much of a fan of her presentation so far.
Yes, I agree. More should be done. I mean, I think it's a gimme, and I want to hear more from her. I want to hear more from Baron Corbin too. I want to know why he's with JBL. Baron Corbin not only can talk, his character likes to talk, and we just don't hear from him. What'd you think of the poker game backstage? You know, something JBL's known for with APA, having Corbin being on that, having Akira Tozawa show up and call out Corbin on attempting to cheat, setting up a quick TV match. Was that good character development for Corbin, or are you still left wanting more clarification and depth to this decision?
Don't make fun of me, Wade. I didn't hate it. I thought it was okay. I thought it was a better use of Corbin's character than they had done in some time. At least it just established them as kind of jerks, and they like to play poker and drink bourbon and all that kind of stuff that at least bonds them in a way to other than just being jerks, rich jerks, I guess. And Tozawa, he's kind of like a guilty pleasure of mine. I enjoy his stuff. It's silly, and I don't know why he has dressed up like a ninja. It seems kind of offensive to me, but I'm not even going to get into that. But I still don't know why he has to dress up as a ninja, but he's funny. I like him. He can go in the ring. I really like the few minutes he got against Baron Corbin. He looked great. He was bouncing all over the place, and he was rapid style. It was awesome, and it made that Baron Corbin squash that much more entertaining, just him being in there. So I actually like what they did with Baron Corbin's character this week. I can't believe it.
Yeah, no, I thought adding a little backstory to why there's a TV match with Tozawa instead of just having Tozawa stand out there cold and get beat up is better than nothing. Having a heel who's getting revved up again, get some wins on television, and having a little backstory to those wins, I think it's just fine. I don't have a problem with it, and the poker game was fine. I think character-wise it was fine, but it still doesn't make up for the fact that we still haven't heard Baron Corbin explain his new character. Like, you know, he was – the Happy Corbin thing went away. It's like JBL comes out and, insults the local city, wants to own the Libs, wants to rip on the sports teams, wants to talk about Kentucky bourbon being underrated compared to Ugandan bourbon, whatever – That's JBL getting himself over and cutting, generic heel promos. It's not establishing layers to where Baron Corbin came from, like where their relationship came from, how they linked up. So other than we saw him get in a limo and I just feel like there's missing weeks in the story here.
Yeah, I can't argue with that. Is I guess we're just supposed to they just want us to fill in the gaps by ourselves, and that. Not there's too many hours of TV and too many segments of TV not to be able to just explain it extremely quickly. Oh, we're both jerks. That's, I knew I needed the biggest jerk to teach me everything I know to get my career back on track. Bam, there you go. That's an explain. And why does Baron Corbin's gear look like he's sponsored by Squarespace? That's what it looks like, that logo yes. looks like on his chest. I don't know
totally.
What that is.
Yeah.
But he's
well
the first
done.
Wrestler to have ads on his wrestling gear. So props to Baron Corbin for being a forward thinker, I guess.
That's tremendous. That's tremendous. JB also says, I love the work of Alpha Academy and what they've been doing, but I can't help but feel that Riddle has been strongly de-emphasized since the pinnacle he reached with Randy Orton this summer. I know the Orton injury changed things, but I still think Riddle has more to offer and should be being pushed at a higher level than he is at the moment. I also feel like he's a victim of the Triple H version of the shiny new toy syndrome that Vince was so often accused of. As always, love the show, and go VIP, everyone. So I am wondering if they're not keeping Riddle just sort of, you know, they looked at the lineup, they know where there's top guys against top guys, and there wasn't really anything for Riddle, and they're waiting and hoping Orton comes back, and then, you know, they're telling a story that maybe, I mean, the story might be that Riddle gets a little off course when Randy's not around, you know, when Big Brother's not around to steer him to stay focused. And maybe this is deliberate, just as Theory losing last week wasn't meant to be a burial. It was meant to be a chapter that led to him having a spark that led to a more vicious side being shown. Maybe what they're doing with Riddle isn't to de-emphasize him, but it's to build the foundation for Orton coming back and going, what's going on with you? what are you doing playing bongos? And then that leads to either one or the other turning heel, or they just team up again, because I think you can get more out of them teaming up. Danny, what do you think?
Yeah, I didn't even think about it that way. Because I thought that's what Randy Orton loved about him so much. He's just this goofy guy, and that's what he found so endearing about him. But, I mean, you could definitely play that out where he just kind of brings him back, and I even think there's money in them going back after the Usos, because they had that big – I think people forgot about that big brawl, that big beatdown they had on them that put Randy Orton out. And I think people would be hot to see them take the titles off the Usos. So, you know, if you don't go with the Sammy KO thing, you could always go with that too. So, I mean, that's another route you could go, get him back focused. And Riddle could still be looking for some retribution for getting taken out by the Bloodline, losing the title shot and everything like that. So, yeah, there's still some steam there.
Yes. When he said he feels like he's a victim of Triple H shiny new toy syndrome, who are the shiny new toys who are getting a push instead of Riddle? Like, I guess there's Gargano, Mustafa Ali. I don't think you'd accuse him of being a shiny new toy, or Dolph Ziggler, or Akira Tozawa. I mean, Baron Corbin was off TV for a while, but like, I don't sense that Riddle is getting pushed off to the side because someone else is getting pushed instead of him who's new. So I guess I don't quite get that.
Yeah, no, that wouldn't really be a fair criticism for Riddle. His thing was kind of over because you went to the show, right, where he lost to Roman. When was that? Was that July, June?
I can't even remember.
That would have been actually right before he even took over. So he was kind of already on the downslope after that. So it was kind of, I mean, other than being with Seth Rollins, I mean, I think he's about the same. I think Riddle's about in the same position he would have been in had Vince still been there or anything. It's just kind of the natural progression. That was kind of it for him. I mean, where else was he supposed to go? He lost to the top dog, and that was kind of it. I mean, he wasn't going to be a constant challenger for the belt. So, I mean, I guess that doesn't really hold much water with me personally. But, yeah, I mean, I don't think he's dead in the water. I think he'll be okay. I mean, he's going to take a little backseat for right now, but I think he'll be all right. I don't think he's completely they just wrote him off just yet. So he'll be okay.
All right, very good. Let's go to area code 818 next. 818, go ahead, state your name and where you're calling from.
Hey, my name is Chris. I'm calling from near San Diego.
All right, cool. Chris, good to hear from you. Yeah, what are your thoughts on Raw tonight? Chris, you said?
Yeah, so I actually have a comment on it seems like people are thinking that the match is going to be Sammy and Kevin versus the Usos. I've been seeing Sammy versus Roman being the money match for me.
I'm with you, but I don't know if Paul Levesque is willing to put his first WrestleMania main event with his top star Roman Reigns in the hands of Sami. Not because he might not think that's the best match in terms of what's going on TV, but if it doesn't do well, that's like benching your, you know, max player in the NBA to play some bench player who's playing better defense and working harder, but you still lose. You know, it's like, uh-oh. So that's the thing. But, Chris, I mean, that's the match I think most people want to see more than some of the other options that are floating out there.
That's what it is for me. It's been staring at me in the face. I mean, staring at everybody in the face. So that was the one comment I had on that one. If you can put the pieces, I mean, if you can fantasy book it, then you have The Rock come out on Raw the next day. You have a SummerSlam match. Then you build the next WrestleMania after that. That's what you do. If you can, in my personal opinion, that's how you do it.
Chris, do you think Sammy, before we move on from Sammy, if you do that match, do you have Sammy just lose to Roman and Roman goes on? Or does it cross your mind that maybe Sammy should win?
You definitely Sammy. I was at WrestleMania last year, and the only match where, besides the Vince Stone Cold thing, that's when everybody else stood. There was a roar that I'd never heard before in my life that happened when Vince peeled his jacket back. I couldn't see it where I was, but I felt it. And I was like, what happened? And I knew what happened as I felt it. I was like, oh, he's taking off his jacket. Couldn't see it, but I knew it would happen because the energy was there. So besides that, people that were on their feet, the entire match was the Sammy match versus Knoxville. The entire time. Everybody was invested. Yep. Whether there were adults, because there were adults like, oh, we like this. We used to watch this when we were kids. That's what happened to us. The adults that were watching the show.
Yeah.
The kids that were watching the show was like, this is cool, because they're kids. So the entire stadium was on their feet for the entire match. So, and Triple H was there, and he was the first person that we stood for. So I want to say that would be the right thing to do. If Paul is listening, I've never called him Paul. I don't know him. But if he admits it, that's what I would suggest. Because the audience, we would love to see that. It would be a glorious thing to see. And have it be something that is, there's so much content. Go ahead.
Yeah. Yeah, Chris. So Chris and I talked about this. Danny, your thoughts on that?
I don't want to sound contrarian, but no, I can't back the Sammy match. It just doesn't do it for me. Like him getting beat in a one-off match in the Royal Rumble or something like that, I can't see him in a higher profile. I mean, I know everybody's behind it. I love that. I mean, if they can convince me otherwise, I would love it, but I don't know. I just don't see, I either think it's Cody or even Rollins could be the, you know, the top WrestleMania program. I just can't see Sammy. That's just my opinion. But, I still think no double is Cody or Rollins.
Yeah, go ahead, Chris. You got a question for Daniel, sounds like. Yeah.
The promos would be great either way. I can just see there's a lot of footage that the WWE seems to be compiling of the faces. But, you know, the happy faces, the sad faces. You know, it's like the festival, the celebration of friends that didn't go the way that Chris Jericho and Kevin Owens wanted. I think this could be the do-over. And I think it could be nice. So the other thing that I had or the comments was, and I wrote this down, I was going to forget, was Corbin. And I don't understand why he's with JBL either. And I think that, do you think that could be leading towards a JBL comeback and having Corbin, you know, turn on JBL, something like that, and having a match like that?
Danny?
I can't see it. I think JBL's just, you know, I don't think he's going to come back for any more matches. He's like the one guy that he had a one-off in the Royal Rumble, I think, about 10 years ago, but he really has stayed retired. I think he's just done.
Wasn't it his back that was just excruciating, I think?
Yeah, it was something like that, but he just had that five-second Rey Mysterio match, and that was it. I don't even think the guy could go for it longer than that. So, I think he's done, but, I mean, I wouldn't mind seeing Corbin beat up JBL, but I mean, I don't think it's going to happen, though.
Well, that was the other comment that I had. So thank you for taking the call. I appreciate you guys.
Great, Chris.
All right, thanks Chris. Thank you.
Okay, so getting back to Raw, exploring the Miz-Dexter segment a little bit more with Gargano, what is your thoughts on Dexter's next step? Like, this thing of him, you know, being hired by Miz and then being, you know, terrorizing Miz and Gargano being the whistleblower. Like, where do all three of these go afterwards? I mean, Miz can just, you know, he feuds with everybody eventually. But is any idea if Dexter's going to come out of this with, like, some momentum after this match in a couple weeks on Raw? And how do you feel they've done in terms of introducing him at this point to a large audience?
Dexter, wow, you got me there. He's probably just going to win the match and then go on stalking somebody else. He's going to be the Bray Wyatt of comedy. He's going to start a feud by just stalking each person randomly, or he's going to be the third man in the Elias Riddle band, and he's going to play the triangle or something. I don't know. I don't know where they're going to please, WWE, if you heard that, please don't do that. That wasn't a real idea.
Too late.
But that does seem like something they probably would do. I can't even place him. Other than him randomly just stalking people and having matches with them, that's the only thing I can really see him doing. Gargano, I mean, he's just a little pest as well. I mean, he just might as well turn heel and that just be his gimmick. He's just GTV, man. I'm going to go around telling on everybody. Tattletale Johnny Tattletale. There you go. That's his new gimmick. And Miz is just going to go complain about Logan Paul some more or do Miz TV every week. You know, he's going to be stuck in the same position too. So kind of just nobody's going to come out of this with any kind of upside or anything. Man, this is a depressing angle.
Anything else from Raw in your notes that you want to bring up before we wrap up here?
Let me scan real quick. I know there was something else I wanted to bring up. Let me see. Dana Brooke was actually mad about the 24/7 title getting thrown in the trash. That was
but she's wrong. Fact check. It didn't get thrown in the trash.
It got thrown next to the trash.
Yeah, she missed. But
I put that in my report last week, and then when I heard you say it, I was like, yes, I wasn't the only one who saw that. I thought I was going to be the only one, but I was not. So thank you for vindicating me, Nate. And something I made note of that I knew that you would like was the Shelton Benjamin promo where Dominic challenges him, and he's standing behind Damian Priest just going, yeah, you're not going to do anything. You're not going to do anything. And then he's just playing Scrappy Doo right behind him, just like, let me at him. And then when Shelton says, yeah, I want to fight you, he's like, wait, I thought you challenged him, Damian Priest, not me. So I thought that was pretty hilarious.
Speaking of things that you think that I would like watching it, it was Damage Control watching the monitor. They weren't at an angle.
They were turned to the side. Yes, they were actually watching the TV.
The way normal people watch it. The camera guy showed the screen, and then he moved to the left and showed them watching, and we knew who they were, and we knew what they were doing, and it didn't look ridiculous. And why was this so hard after all these years?
I did notice that, too, and I was like, oh, my gosh, they did it. Finally. So, yes, I took note of that, too. But, yeah, that was about all I had other than that. Pretty good main event. It was an okay show. Dead crowd.
Yeah. All right, very good. Well, we'll wrap up there. Appreciate it, Danny. Good talking Raw with you.
All right. Thanks again, Wade. Thanks, everybody.
Absolutely.